From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. The date has been set for peace talks for Syria. UN Special Envoy Stefan de Mistura said the talks are set to begin January 25th, 2016, in Geneva. An estimated 250,000 people have been killed and millions displaced in nearly 5 years of fighting there. Veronica Reeves has more.
In a statement announcing the talks, Mr. de Mistura said the people of Syria have suffered enough. He noted that the tragedy in Syria was now being felt far beyond its borders and called on all parties to show leadership and vision to overcome their differences for the sake of the country. The negotiations will build on previous talks that took place in Geneva in 2012 and more recently in Vienna in October and November of this year. The announcement comes a little more than a week after the UN Security Council unanimously adopted a key resolution aimed at bringing peace to Syria. Up until then, the 15-member body had been politically paralyzed, unable to reach agreement on the best path forward. Late last week, the council also adopted a resolution on the humanitarian situation in Syria, demanding full access for critical food and medical assistance, particularly for those trapped in besieged parts of the country. Veronica Reeves, United Nations.
As the parties to the conflict look towards the coming peace talks, a UN brokered deal under which civilians and wounded fighters from opposing sides were allowed to leave conflict zones brought some 300 families to the relative safety of Damascus. Artis Murad Gazdiev was the first to talk with a group rescued from the terrorist al-Nusra Front's siege of their villages in northern Syria.
Just 24 hours ago, these kids, their parents, were under siege, surrounded by Islamist fighters. They've been allowed out, the elderly women, children, and wounded men. They've been allowed to come to Damascus as part of an international Red Cross-sponsored exchange. And having spent 2 years under siege, they've got a story to tell. What happened to your cheek? How were you injured?
I was playing on the roof and the shell fell near me. A bit of shrapnel hit my head.
Two of our brothers were killed in shell fire. We spent so much time in basements that they shot the school. And if you tried to leave the village, Nusra would shoot you.
These kids and their father had been separated for 10 months.
We finally got out. I was so happy to see my dad.
Other families, though, like the Bahirs, weren't so lucky.
It was the day before Mother's Day. My son and husband were out at our shop. I got a call saying my son was dead, torn apart. They said it was a hell cannon rocket.
While Malak and her surviving kids are now safe, their father stayed behind to defend their home.
Nusra Front and their army of conquest have villages surrounded. They hate us just because we are of a different faith.
Shias, rather than Sunni Salafists, the particularly violent brand of Islam, followed by many Syrian rebels and ISIS.
How did you survive? What did you eat?
We lived off the land, and the Syrian Air Force sometimes dropped us food.
We didn't have bread or flour. We went out and picked whatever grew, cooked, and ate it.
What do you feel like now that you've gotten out?
Thank you to whoever organized this. But I feel sorry because so many stayed behind. I hope my friends managed to leave too.
This is Mustafa, their grandfather. He had been waiting in Damascus. We asked him if he had expected to ever see his grandkids again.
Alhamdulillah. Thank you. Now I only hope I will get to see my son.
At a different table sat a group of men holding newborn twins.
They were born when the fighting was at its height. There was no food, no milk, no medicine. I prayed for their safety.
At first glance, the two men seemed unscathed, but only men with injuries were allowed to leave.
No.
Jah Jah lost a leg in the fighting. Ilal Hamzi was a little luckier, though a tank round tore away a chunk of his back.
They threw everything at us. Mortars, rockets, missiles, shells and bullets.
Yet they say those who are still in the fighting back home won't give up.
We will win because our cause is just. We are fighting foreigners, Afghans, Turks, Chechens. It used to be that no one was judged by your religion in Syria.
Murad Gazdiev, RT, from Damascus.
More evidence that Saudi-occupied Bahrain has been called upon to support Riyadh's war on Yemen, with a report that a Bahraini F-16 fighter jet taking part in the military campaign in Yemen crashed in southern Saudi Arabia Wednesday. The Bahraini pilot participating in airstrikes against Yemen reportedly survived after the fall of his plane in the Jizan region Wednesday morning. That report came on the heels of an announcement Tuesday that Kuwait would be sending military support to the Saudi campaign against Yemen, which seeks to reinstall that country's former president, Abdrabu Mansour Hadi, who took office in 2012 after running unopposed in a Saudi-brokered transitional election. Hadi resigned this past January after his 2-year term had expired. When subsequent efforts by Riyadh to reinstall him were met by a popular uprising, the Saudis began a bombing campaign that has lasted for the past 9 months, killing more than 8,000 civilians, displacing millions, and destroying most of the country's infrastructure. December marked 1 year of imprisonment for veteran activist the Reverend Edward Pinckney after his conviction in 2014 of charges related to his efforts to force a recall election of the mayor of Benton Harbor, Michigan. Pinckney had been accused of altering the dates on several of the signatures on a petition seeking to recall the mayor of the Michigan city that is home to the Whirlpool Corporation's corporate headquarters. Pinckney accuses the mayor of being a puppet of Whirlpool. Supporters of the activist have found their access to the Reverend severely curtailed by the Michigan State Corrections Authorities. Pinckney was moved hundreds of miles upstate from Benton Harbor earlier this year, and the Corrections Department recently withdrew his right to use the telephone or email. Marcina Cole is one of those supporters. We spoke with her last week via Skype from Benton Harbor.
Edward Pinckney's been incarcerated since last year in December 2014. He was charged and convicted of altering dates on a recall petition against the former Mayor James Hightower in Benton Harbor. He was convicted by an all-white jury, 5 counts of felony fraud, forgery, and sentenced to 2.5 years to 10 years. Currently, he's at the Marquette Branch Prison. Prior to Marquette, October the 5th of this year, he was at the Lakeland Correctional Facility, and I went to see him at that time. Was at Coldwater, Michigan, and I knew something was going on because I had went to visit him at in the afternoon, and I was there for 2.5 hours before they allowed me, the prison officials allowed me to see him. There were 8 people that came after me to visit inmates, but I was the last one, and I knew something was up. So the following day, October the 6th, he was transferred in the wee hours of the morning to Marquette.
Which is like five hours or six hours or something away.
It's 500 miles away from his his wife and family supporters. There was no reason for them to transfer them. Reverend Pinckney there, I do know in the prison facilities in the state of Michigan, they do transfer inmates from time to time, but there was a stamp saying expedite pertaining to Reverend Pinckney to go to be transported to Marquette with shackles. Mm-hmm. He arrived there on the 6th of Marquette, and everything's been going downhill. Lakeland facility, he was able to have visitors. And there was no restrictions like he has now. You know, he got along with the prisoners. He had church services there. He was very well liked with the majority of the prisoners, and he rarely had any problems with the correctional officers at that Lakeland facility. However, things have changed for him. He has been exposed to mold, which I say within weeks after his arrival from from Lakeland to Marquette prison. And he had had respiratory problems from the effects of the mold in his cell and feeling nauseous. He was transferred to another cell, but he told me at the time when he was able to talk to people on the phone prior to his phone privileges taken away, he mentioned that, you know, he still felt sick. Nevertheless, weeks passed and, you know, he felt better. But unfortunately, things weren't getting any better for him. He felt that outside the prison walls, Barron County Courthouse, the politicians in Barron County had ordered for him to immediately be transferred from Lakeland. And he feels that the type of treatment that he's receiving at this time was the blessings of the Judge Schrock in Barron County, Mike Sepik, the prosecutor attorney, and other officials as well. And they want his demise. But Reverend Pinckney is strong. He is dealing with challenges over there at the prison. Months had passed since October. It's now December. What's happening now with Reverend Pinckney, the food is not good, just like it was not good at the Lakeland Correctional Facility. It was earmarked at the time. It was so bad, and because of the public pressure, the earmark contract was finally suspended. It was rat-infested food. They actually had drug contraband found in the cooking areas, in the kitchen over there at Airmark. And so they found a lot of things at the prison. And so it was so much piling up, and the governor just could not deny anymore that there was nothing wrong with Airmark. Keep in mind, those contractors, these vendors that make millions of dollars feeding, you know, substandard food, you know, anytime you're feeding garbage from the ground, from the trash cans to the inmates, obviously they get sick. So Reverend Pinckney decided not to eat any Airmark food when he was in Lakeland. And it was very costly for his wife and others to basically supply money for food to be bought at the vending machines. His phone privilege was taken away from him. And somewhere around October 23rd, I had spoke to him that date. And then his wife had spoke to him later, and then they suspended his phone privileges. And currently, he cannot talk on the phone. You know, we're in December 2015. He still can't speak to anybody on the phone. He can write letters to his attorney and to his wife and friends. However, his mail has been tampered with, including the mail that he sends to his attorney. So violation of, you know, client privilege to speak to his attorney, to write to him. They opened those letters also. So I think, Reverend Pinckney doesn't feel very comfortable writing letters to supporters at this time. So when he does, it's very vague, most cases, because he knows that they have been charging him with just bogus things that weren't true, and you know, issuing him tickets. So at one time, his visitation rights was suspended. That happened recently. Well, I went to see him, and Mrs. Pinckney and I went to see him, and we had another supporter. She drove us to Marquette we started off from Ann Arbor, Michigan to Benton Harbor. That was November the 11th. We set out to go visit Mrs. Pinckney. From there, we stayed over her house in the morning November the 12th, and we set out to go to Marquette Prison wee hours in the morning, about 6 o'clock, and we arrived there just in time during the visit. The hours started around, I believe, sometime around 5 o'clock. We spent like 3 hours there to visit Reverend Pinckney. Very intimidating. It was a lot of guards walking back and forth, going through different doors from the sides, front. It was quite disturbing to me. I mean, they all have weapons. They're all outside of the prison, which was built around 1889. So it's a very old structure. And the place is filled with mold. So nevertheless, we were being watched when we finally was approved to see Reverend Pinckney, Mrs. Pinckney and I, which we thought that was disturbing, considering that they had visitors behind us. They were Caucasian. A couple of ministers were there visiting, but the eyes were all on us. So apparently the female guard had orders to watch us, which was on the first day, on the 12th. I did take notes, and I was not accosted by anyone. The second day, we had gone there the second day, which was, I think it was, I don't know what day it was, which was 13th. And we visited him with no problems. And overall, we also visited the Governor Snyder's office, northern office in Marquette. But there was no one, there was no official there, but there was a secretary and took some notes. And we demanded that Reverend Pinckney be transferred from the Marquette branch prison because we felt that his safety was being compromised. So unfortunately, we really didn't get an answer from Governor Snyder's office. But right now,
he's 10 hours away, right? And we're 9 or 10 hours away, 500 miles away.
Right.
And can't use the telephone. So he's essentially incommunicado.
Right. He can't call anyone. Before he, you know, when I had my conference calls, he was able to be one of my guest speakers. I had him every other week. And apparently the prison officials were aware of the calls. They were aware of him being on the radio shows. So they suspended that immediately. Few of his tickets that he did receive, he won through the appeals. However, they did not lift where he can use his phone right now. So but my understanding is 180 more days before he's able to resume that phone privileges. And so that's quite a long time. But after we had visited him, maybe over a week from then, I think on the 20th of November, another supporter had came there, actually flew there. And he got in contact with some other activists in Marquette, and they had news coverage throughout the whole week in Marquette. So the prison officials apparently were very angry about that, and they accused Reverend Pinckney of trying to smuggle some information out of there because the supporter had came there and actually took notes, but they confiscated those notes prior to him leaving out the door. They told him to empty his pockets. So that was around November the 20th. Mm-hmm. And because he spent there 2 days. That was the first day he came to visit the supporter activists. And they told him that, you know, to take the paper out of his pocket. So at that time, when the second day he went to go there, he was actually approached out in the parking lot and said they told him he could not come there and to get off the property. So it was just so odd that he actually came outside to the car, to his vehicle. And from there, they said no visitors at all. And so obviously, you know, they had the press going throughout the week. And I guess they got very, very angry after that, you know. And so the news people had actually called up the prison and wanted to know what's going on. Of course, they said a bunch of lies and they called the Michigan Department of Corrections. They lied and said, Reverend, you know, Reverend Pinckney, they don't call him Reverend, they call him Mr. Pinckney. They don't even recognize him being a Reverend. And they said they haven't received any complaints from him, which was an outright lie, too. So we know the powers may be, you know, what's happening with Reverend Pinckney. Continuation of harassment, intimidation. And he was, when I visited him, when Mrs. Pinckney and I visited him, it was, he was on a 24/7 lockdown. Actually, he felt more safer, according to him, when he was in the, you know, in the cells where he couldn't go out because he felt that he go outside the prison cell that some of the prison guards would try to intimidate him and force him to basically, you know, react to them trying to physically do harm to him. So he rather stayed in the cell at the time. But when this happened November the 20th with the other supporter, he actually was disciplined and he was currently in, at the time he was level one. And when they said he was trying to smuggle information out outside, they put him in level five, which is quite extreme. Those are the serious criminals with murder and all this other stuff. So they put him in isolation, solitary confinement, whatever you want to call it, for 5 days. And then now he's in the back to level one.
He's in prison for basically carrying petitions to recall the mayor. They accused him and convicted him of changing dates on the petitions. The people who signed next to those dates say that the dates that are on the petition are the ones that's when they signed. So the evidence countered the charges. He's in prison for this rather than getting fined or sanctioned in one way or another. And he's being treated like he's a Class A terrorist instead of being treated like someone who messed with a petition. This is in response to his standing up against the takeover of Benton Harbor and similar ones in Detroit and other minority-majority cities in Michigan. Is anyone else taking notice of this around the country?
Well, you know what? I'm glad you mentioned that because it's so absurd that there was no evidence to charge him of altering any dates. Initially, they said altering dates and signatures, but that was dropped. Six of those charges were dropped pertaining to the signatures. And so they claimed five felony charges of altering dates. But the forensic analysis or handwriting analysis couldn't find anything to actually say, okay, this person, Reverend Pinckney, had allegedly altered dates. And it's, you know, obviously they, you know, basically what Barron County Courthouse says that we don't need evidence to convict Reverend Pinckney, just to silence him because Reverend Pinckney and others that reside in Barron County said the world pool needs to pay taxes not the poor blacks, over 93% black in Benton Harbor, to pay taxes. And this is why Reverend Pinckney and others, not just him, you know, stated that, you know, it was unfair and we wanted to recall the former mayor. I must say he did lose the election. the former mayor, James Hightower, for not being supportive of Whirlpool, who sits in the heart of Benton Harbor, has their headquarters, who don't pay taxes, but it's the burden on the poor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, former Mayor James Hightower wanted to put the burden on the state, the taxpayers, that pay over $2 million for taxes rather than going after the people who are making over $20 billion a year, the Whirlpool Corporation. And I must say the heir to Whirlpool is Fred Upton. He is a legislator in the state of Michigan. So he have a vested interest to keep it where it is. And so they targeted Reverend Pinckney because of his organization, Banco, and his involved with civil rights for years, you know, mouthpiece for the people. They didn't want that. They want to shut him down. That's why he's currently in prison. And yes, people are taking notice across this country and abroad. The word is getting out. And myself and other activists, we trying very, very hard to spread the word even further, like getting on radio stations, writing to independent media sources. For some reason, the corporate media don't want to touch it about Reverend Pinckney's story, the atrocities going on with Reverend Pinckney, and why they keep targeting him, the politicians, judge, the judges, and the prosecutor and the police. They're all working together to silence him in this last action that, that occurred where he's at the Marquette Steadfast. They went right after him and start basically attacking him verbally, calling him names at the Marquette prison, disrespectful toward him. And this is what he has to deal with. Some of them kind of let off on him, some of the correctional guards, but he's having a problem with one in particular that he felt that he was going to plant a weapon in one in his locker. Mm-hmm. And he sent word that for one of his attorneys to be contacted so they can contact the state trooper. And I tried to call another supporter and ask them, could they reach out to some people that they made contacts in Marquette that reside in Marquette, Michigan, to see what was going on. So it was very disturbing. That happened December the 16th. And, you know, Reverend Pinckney, I wanted just to share with you what he had, just a little bit what he had written. He basically was saying that was an SOS alerting us to sudden escalation and level of danger in this current situation. They weren't trying to alarm supporters about it, but based overall, he wanted someone to call up, well, his attorneys to call up immediately the state troopers. And he said he was continuously threatened, harassed, and intimidated. And I am even afraid they will plant a weapon in my locker. And so and that's when he mentioned about the state police.
What can people do? How can people get in touch?
Okay, this is what people can do. We want, this is one of the things we want, because of Reverend Pinckney, he's so strong, but what uplifts him the most, if people would contact Reverend Edward Pinckney at the Marquette Branch Prison by holiday cards, letters of encouragement. And I'm looking for
I've got the information. It's at bhbanco.org. That's the website, bhbanco, bhbanco.org. If you go to the website, there's a sample script and contact information for calling Governor Rick Snyder, the Legislative Corrections Ombudsman, Keith Barber, the MDOC Director, Heidi Washington, and the Marquette Branch Prison. You can, and there's a script to read and phone numbers and all of that. Marcina Cole, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.